You are listening to a sermon by Lauren Wilkinson, recorded on Sunday, November 24th, 2024, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, it's good to be back with you again, and I am at home at this time because we have power and internet. I began this series a few weeks ago by asking a question based on Paul's words in Romans 8: "What is creation waiting for?" And Paul gives us the answer: creation is waiting in eager expectation for the revealing of the children of God. Who are the children of God? Well, that's us, you and me. We who are trying to be followers of Christ are children of God. But what does it mean to be children of God? We are created in the image of God. We say that phrase often, but what does it mean? That phrase opens up a vast landscape for us, and we can explore only a tiny part of it today, what it means to be made in the image of God. And by the way, I want to just insert here that if you want to explore the idea of the image of God in much greater depth, let me recommend to you this very fine book written by George Hobson. It's called Imago Dei, Man, Woman, Created in the Image of God. George actually met with us on Zoom last week from France, and I thought he was going to be here again today, but I don't believe he is. And he's Rosie Pereira's uncle, and he's spoken to this group before. This book sheds a lot of light on many important questions, including the fact that God made us in two kinds, man and woman. We're not exploring that part of the landscape today, but I do encourage you to read this book, and Rosie can tell you how to get it. But back to what we are talking about today. I want to explore some of what we can conclude about ourselves by looking at the one example we have of what it means to be made in the image of God. And that example is Jesus, the author to the Hebrews, in a passage we considered last week, called Jesus Christ the exact imprint of God's very being. And in Romans 8, the same part of Romans where Paul says that creation is waiting for us to be revealed as the children of God, Paul says in verse 29 that we are predestined to be the image of God's Son. That's what it means to be in Christ and to have Christ in us. What does it mean to be a self? What does it mean to be a self in Christ? That's the question I want to explore today. What does our human selfhood, shaped by Christ, mean for the rest of creation? To return to the title of my own book, what does being a self made in the image of God mean for being a consciousness in the cosmos? Those two circles I talked about last week, consciousness and cosmos. And I referred to the image of the Celtic cross as a way of reflecting on that mystery of what it means that the sacrificial love of God is at the center of the circle of cosmos and the circle of creation. I'm going to be drawing especially on that one text in Philippians 2, which we looked at briefly in my first talk a month ago and heard again this morning, and one great poem by Gerard Manley Hopkins. It's the last one printed on your worship sheet. First, let me say a bit about what I said last week in connection with the title of my book, and I'm sorry you have to read this in backwards, Cosmos, Consciousness, Christ, and the Human Place in Creation. I want to talk about those two circles again briefly, cosmos and consciousness. One Why should there, the circle of cosmos, why should there be anything at all? That's a mystery which science can't answer. Tools like the James Webb telescope that we looked at briefly last week can tell us all sorts of things about the cosmos, but not why. To science, then, the question of why should there be something and not nothing remains a mystery. And the other mystery is the circle of our own consciousness. Why should this collection of stardust, which is you and me, each of us, be an I and not just an it? We experience this mystery every day, and the natural human reaction is wonder. Children are more likely to live in wonder. We human beings, we grown-ups, don't live in wonder enough. Nevertheless, wonder underlies the most important things about being human. It's the soil from which grow the three great trees of human culture: worship, science, and art. Now, we are in a worship service. I'm not going to say much about worship. You think about it often. Except that it is a universal human attempt to respond in thankfulness and awe to the gift of being, which is poured out upon us. We talked a bit about science last week, our attempt to understand that mystery of a universe. But today I want to think a bit more about art, that ability that we have to answer the creativity of God through our own creativity. We've already, you have at least, experienced and produced one art, music, as part of this worship service. I'm sitting in front of another, I think, great work of art that's also on the cover of my book. I talked a bit last week. But I want especially to draw on a third art, poetry, the language of words, the art that I'm perhaps most familiar with myself. And I've included four poems in your bulletin. The first three are specifically about wonder. I'll let them speak for themselves and read them with little comment. We'll return to that fourth poem by Hopkins in a bit more detail at the very end. The first two poems are by a 20th century poet, Denise Levertov. She became known as an eloquent professor. I'm going to leave my glasses on. Eloquent protester of many of the evils of our time, like the Vietnam War and the threat of nuclear weapons. But increasingly, despite all the suffering she felt and protested, she was struck by the wonder of simply being. And thus, this first poem titled Being. Now, one reason I wanted you to have a copy is I want you to notice the punctuation. So look at the poem and pay attention to the punctuation as I read it. I know this happiness is provisional. The looming presences, great suffering, great fear, withdraw only into peripheral vision. But ineluctable, this shimmering of wind in the blue leaves, this flood of stillness widening the lake of sky, this need to dance, this need to kneel, this mystery. Each statement of the poem ends with a colon. The poem itself ends with a colon. What does that punctuation tell us? Remember your grammar back in English class. A colon tells us that the idea isn't finished yet, that there's more to come. A colon points to something more, which is to follow. What is the something more which our being conscious in the cosmos tells us, points to? Denise Levertov, as she grew older, kept asking that question, and it led her back to the Christian faith she had left as a child. And this has happened to many artists, perhaps more and more in our own time. Her father was an Anglican priest. His parents were Jewish in Britain. She expressed that return to her faith in another poem titled simply Primary Wonder. Once more, the quiet mystery is present to me. The throng's clamor recedes. The mystery that there is anything, anything at all, let alone cosmos, joy, memory, everything rather than void, and that, O Lord, Creator, Hallowed One, you still, hour by hour, sustain it. She recognized that there was a person behind the mystery of the cosmos, behind the mystery of her own consciousness. That person she came to know was Christ. The third poem was published quite recently by a living poet, the Irish Micheál O'Shiel. He has a reputation of one of Ireland's greatest living poets, but he was reluctant to speak publicly as a Christian poet for fear his work would be dismissed too easily. He feared, as he puts it in a poem, the zeitgeist sneer. But he prefaced a recent collection of poems called Testament with these words. This is that book, Testament. Now in my mid-70s, writes O'Shiel, I dare to be more open. Though from the first, belief suffused my poetry. When younger, I was reticent about naming it. I think I was afraid to be labeled. Now I feel a deeper need to give testimony to a source which has sustained my life. And one of those 150 poems, that's deliberately the same number as the Psalms, has been a great comfort to both my wife and myself as we enter our 80s. We're old, and some of you perhaps know what that feels like. This poem, too, is based in wonder. Each year I live, the richer years become. I feel the nearness now of all the earth, this clay where I belong from birth to fall. Every season courses through my blood, the sap that wakes from winter's reverie, each bud that breaks, each tumbling crimson leaf, such bursts of yellows, reds, and blues, vibrating hues of light that flood my veins, ignite a spectrum of your glory's praise. As though, when ebbing life accelerates, you show so much that must have passed me by, holding back what's most intense till last. Aware how my genetic tape runs down, I risk this bliss I didn't dare before. Could paradise be half as good as this? This earth's splendor I can hardly bear. My bore must be too slender still for you. Are you preparing me for more and more? Take comfort in that as you grow older. Each of these poems express the wonder of our being a conscious self in this great gift of a cosmos. Now, we live in a time of considerable confusion about what it means to be a human self. A few years ago, there was a popular women's magazine called simply Self. We have a proliferation of life coaches, counselors, psychiatrists, and self-help books. A few years ago, when self-help books were even more the rage, the American novelist Walker Percy wrote a very funny and very profound book called Lost in the Cosmos. Then he subtitled it The Last Self-Help Book. He proposed in his introduction some subtitles. The Strange Case of the Self, Yourself, the Ghost Which Haunts the Cosmos. Or How Can You Survive in the Cosmos About Which You Know More and More While Knowing Less and Less About Yourself? This despite 10,000 self-help books, 100,000 psychotherapists, and 100 million fundamentalist Christians. Or, why is it that of all the billions and billions of strange objects in the cosmos, novas, quasars, pulsars, black holes, you are beyond doubt the strangest? Well, I recommend that book, Walker Percy's Lost in the Cosmos. What does it mean to be a self in Christ? Let's look again at that Philippians text. But I'm going to begin a couple of verses earlier. Paul writes in verse, I think, 3, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility regard others as better than yourselves. That each of you look not to your own interests, but to the interests of others. And then the verse continues with what we heard today. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who emptied himself, humbled himself. Now, the passage suggests that, as we all know, that being a human self can be, and also often is, the basis for ambition or conceit, for expanding myself at the expense of other selves. Or it can be the basis for a kind of self-emptying. That's the word kenosis in Greek that Paul uses here. Christ emptied himself. A self-emptying which gives space for other selves to be selves. Now, I suggested last week that the whole cosmos is the result of God's making space for other creatures to be. The self-emptying of the Creator, which we see most clearly in Christ on the cross, lets other selves be. Thus, paradoxically, the self-giving Christ is the Word which sustains all things, without which nothing could be. And to expand that a bit, to reflect on that, I want to use the words of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins. Hopkins was a 19th century British poet who converted to Catholicism, which is a fairly dangerous and expensive thing to do in the Britain of the 19th century. It was not easy to be a student at Oxford where he was and also be a Catholic. He then became a Jesuit. He lived his life in obscurity. His poetry was not published until the 20th century, 30 years after his death, but it's been hugely influential. You almost certainly have heard some lines from his work, lines like, glory be to God for dappled things, in a poem called Pied Beauty, or the world is charged with the grandeur of God, or this poem, a favorite among environmentalists, wildness and wet, wildness and wet, long live the weeds and the wilderness yet. The poem I want to share is a little difficult, and I've printed it for you. It tells us, I think, much of what it means to be a self and to be a self in Christ. It begins with these words. As kingfishers catch fire, dragonflies draw flame, as tumbled over rim in roundy well stones ring, like each tucked string tells, each hung bell's bow swung finds tongue to fling out broad its name. Each mortal thing does one thing and the same, deals out that being indoors each one dwells, selves, goes itself. Myself, it speaks and spells, crying, what I do is me, for that I came. So what Hopkins is saying is that everything has a unique self. That's God's gift, a costly gift of letting things be. Notice how often that phrase, let there be, occurs in the Genesis account. It's not so much God commanding things to be a particular way. It's God letting them be themselves. Everything has a unique self. We can let the panpsychists that we mentioned briefly last week decide whether perhaps everything has a consciousness, but we know we do. Kingfishers, dragonflies, even the sound of stones dropped in a well, each at the sound of a tucked string, a tightened string, each bell has its own tone. Everything has its own unique self and character. Everything, in Hopkins' words, does one thing and the same. Itself goes itself. And so do we humans. Despite all the damage that human selfishness does in the world to each other and to other creatures, we have unique selves, and that's a good thing. It's good to have and be a self. The Buddhist idea, which is understandable and we can sympathize with it, that the self is such a dangerous idea that it's really an illusion and we need to get rid of the idea of the self. It's not the answer. We cannot deny the reality of our own unique selves. And we have to have a self. It's not bad to have or be a self, despite the danger of selfishness. As Jesus says, we even love ourselves, need to love ourselves before we can give ourselves to our neighbor, create a space in which any other creature can move more fully be itself. And the supreme example of God's selving is Christ, a kind of giving for the other. Christ points us to that attitude which we should have, the mind of Christ. And that takes us to the conclusion of Hopkins' poem. As he said, everything declares itself. Myself, it speaks and spells. But then in the last six lines, as he shifts, as a good sonnet does, to another angle, he says, I say more. The just man justices. Keeps grace, that keeps all his goings, graces. Acts in God's eye, what in God's eye he is, Christ. For Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes, not his, to the Father, through the features of men's faces. Hopkins here turns justice into a verb. The just man justices. To do justice to another is to let that other self, whether human or not, be fully itself, be what God made it to be, what God lets it be. We humans, like Christ, like God himself, have the ability to use our selfhood to create a space in which other selves can flourish. And in that giving away of ourselves for the sake of other selves, we act as Christ. We act as Christ does for the whole, as God does for the whole creation. And thus the last three lines of the poem. Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs and lovely in eyes not his, to the Father through the features of men's, or as we heard, of all our faces. To be a self in such a way that our selfhood lets other selves flourish. That's what it means to be a self in Christ. Now, we don't have time to trace all of the ways in which that this attitude, having the mind of Christ, might work out in how we treat other people, how we treat other creatures, for all creatures have selves. But we treat them that way in the decisions we make. We heard some of those disastrous decisions in the things read from about the land acknowledgement at the beginning, about what some European selves did to indigenous selves. We make those kinds of decisions of how we use our selfhood all the time through what we eat, what we build, what we consume. So the challenge that faces us as we try to live, knowing that the self-giving love of God is at the center of the cosmos, is what does it mean for how we treat ourselves? How can we live in such a way that Christ plays in 10,000 places, plays in the small decisions we make, not only towards each other, which is the most obvious and perhaps important way in which we empty ourselves, but towards the other selves, the other creatures that we use in our living in creation. I like the words of Orthodox thinker Alexander Schmemann, which I had printed at the beginning of this bulletin. We are each, in everything we do, the priest of a cosmic sacrament, receiving the world from God and offering it back to God in thankfulness. So I pray that we will learn to live the mind of Christ with that kind of attitude, receiving creation as a gift from God and offering it through our art, through our worship, our science, through all that we build and do, back to God in thankfulness. Thank you.